Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about the career of Will Smith. I don't even know where to jump in because he has such a long career. But, you know, this is a guy who hit his adult height at 6'2", at 13, and became a millionaire before 20. So I don't have a lot to, like, relate to personally with the guy. But I do remember him back from the days of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
He hit at a good point, actually, in terms of media today, namely that he was in a hit TV show, which you just mentioned, and you know, everyone knows the image at that point, right? You could make movies for years and not have an audience that size. So he hits that way. Also, secondly, and as importantly, arguably maybe more important even because of his rapper background, he hits a demographic, he hits an audience that may or may not know him for movies, TV, whatever. And it's like with two guns blazing sort of thing, and I mean that in a nice way, namely that you've got the TV show recognition, you're a rapper, it's all hitting at about the same point, and you become a celebrity, and at some level you're famous for being famous, right? That's not to take away from any of his talent, but simply that he's a known property, an entity that way. The thing I would want to say about Will Smith in terms of why he became such a big deal is that partly explains it, but as much or more than that, the fact that he's got a kind of likability, mm-hmm. which this is a qualitative assessment, but the quantitative aspect of it is you look at the box office and it pays off. There are a handful of actors who have that kind of likability to them. You know, we think of Tom Hanks, we think of a few actors, we just like them. There's an essential decency. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a matter of being photogenic, of being good looking, of having a nice smile, million-dollar smile. Yeah, there's that. But also the fact that it's somebody you like, somebody you trust, and you'll stay with that character through any number of films. And in that respect, he is one of, along with Hanks, he's one of the most bankable of Hollywood movie stars. He's had some misfires along the way, but you know what? When he's had a misfire, it has not derailed the career, which can happen to other actors, because he's had really big box office films and in several series where what do? You make the sequel and sequels over a period of years, and they almost all pay off at the box office. So if you were a producer looking to hire someone, why get a Will Smith type when you could have Will Smith himself? And this is one reason why he's always working as much as he wants. And, you know, from that early age you mentioned, now as he's about 51 now as he gets into his 50s, he's just as bankable now. Again, there are only a handful of actors who've had that kind of clout over a long period of time.
I think you've hit on the key, and it's that likability. He was able to take that Fresh Prince persona and turn it into the movie characters. And I think that's why people kept coming to see him in things. There is something about him, though, that is not just the goofball. Because when they remade The Upside recently and they had Kevin Hart in the role that Omar Sy did in Untouchables, I remember thinking, what is it that is not working about Kevin Hart? I mean, he's funny, he's likable. But I thought they should have made it Will Smith. Will Smith would have given it that not everything is a joke kind of a way to approach comedy.
Yeah, because, you know, Kevin Hart, and this is not a slam against him, he's a very funny but in a kind of stand-up comic way, you can never entirely take him seriously, right?
Exactly.
Because even if he's having a heartfelt moment and even have a glycerin tear come down the cheek or something, you always know there's going to be a punchline next.
Yes.
It's always, and then you get angry at yourself for having fallen sentimentally for this because it's just a joke, right? But with Will Smith, you realize there's some basic integrity. And this is something that, again, it's a qualitative thing. You can't really prove this, but
right.
You feel it, you know it. And that's why with him, as silly as some of the material is, and a lot of it is really in some of the sequels he's done to these box office hits, but even there, you just feel like somehow there's an integrity. So as hokey and as extreme as some of the plot lines might be, and just basically, you know, you're there to be entertained, there will be a moment, there'll be a scene where you realize there are real life consequences, this is real emotion, there's something there for him. And that puts it into what I call higher stakes territory, that you really care about this guy. The characters, as marginal as they might otherwise be, but you care about them here, and fundamentally because you care about the actor. And this is where it's persona driven. So as silly or as extraneous as some of the storyline might be, there's a real person there playing this silly role.
You know, and I think he commits, you know, 100%, no matter how silly the role is. And some of the stuff that he's done where he's had, it's a franchise like the Bad Boys series. You know, he started that way back in the day with Martin Lawrence. And Martin Lawrence is no longer a big star. But when you see the remakes and the new movies with them, they're still like the same buddies they used to be. And it's like you caught up with some old friends. It gives you that feeling.
This is a case of where you have a superior actor and what he can do with inferior material. The original Bad Boys, to remind us, goes back to 1995. Mm-hmm. And always, as a producer, there's the worry that, well, it's a box office hit, but if too many years go by, will the public want to revisit it? And in the case of the Bad Boys, you know, you had even that first sequel, it was like 2003 or something, so that many years between. And now, just, you know, all these years later to bring it back again. How do you handle this? Because so many years have gone by, you know, they don't look quite the same. They're middle-aged, you know, should they be goofing off like this? And this is where, to the extent that you can, you turn it to advantage. There are a lot of age-related jokes in the most recent Bad Boys, like, you know, you're too creaky to do this or that. But he's doing this elsewhere in his career, in Gemini Man, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, he plays a guy who's retired or wants to be retired and then gets pulled back into the game, and we can talk some more about that. But the fact that rather than trying to mask it, and to some extent you can with de-aging, and we'll talk about that as well, but essentially with stories like Bad Boys now with its third iteration with Gemini Man, the fact that, yeah, he's a middle-aged actor, but he still has that joie de vivre and that spirit within him. He still is reasonably nimble and can get around. He can still do the stunts, but by the same token, looking at him, he's entering or well into middle age, so don't try to hide that or act like it's not the case. Turn it to comic advantage.
Well, I think also the audience has grown up with him, so his fans from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air are now middle-aged, so it's time for, you know, that sort of relating to where you are.
It's
kind of
a wake-up call for all of us.
Now, that movie I saw in a, it was completely packed theater, but all the men were Will Smith's age. So they laughed at every single joke. It was all their movie.
I had a similar audience, actually. It was a lot of middle-aged guys who were laughing at it, so they were relating to it. Now, here's the devil's advocate question. To what extent will really young, or at least younger viewers, what would be a more desirable target demographic, if you will, they'll know him certainly, but will they respond the same way? And I haven't crunched all those numbers in terms of Bad Boys. This most recent one's done really well. But as to who's in the audience, based on your comment and mine, anecdotally, I see a lot of people who grew up with Will Smith and are still fans that way. But will somebody who's a teenager now, you know, say, hey, let's go see it this weekend? I honestly don't know.
Some of my, we'll say, traditionally aged college students, meaning like 18 to 22, were really excited about Gemini Man coming out. And part of that is because it was an Ang Lee movie. But it was also, well, you know, Will Smith, he's cool in the Men in Black movies. You know, this ought to be pretty good. And what I will say about Gemini Man, because, you know, we did talk about that on another show, I was the only person in the theater the day I saw it, and I saw it in that magnificent 3D. So it was like Will Smith was in the room with me, you know, so he had a beer. So, you know, it was like having a beer with Will Smith because the 3D was so good. But that movie really was not all that good, except for the fabulousness of the aging de-aging.
Okay, so enough bragging. Enough bragging about having a beer with Will Smith. I haven't had the privilege. but to double back on a point as to longevity in a career, when you think about Bad Boys beginning in 95, and you can revisit it like once a decade and it's still there for you, talk about an annuity. I mean, talk about something that really pays off for you. But also, and not coincidentally, the first Men in Black came out in 97, and the fact that, you know, you have a franchise and that's money in the bank for you when it's so successful. And if you can revisit it however often you do, you can always go back to that. And it's like a 1-2 punch for him from the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And whatever else he was doing in between, he could always return to those roles. And very few actors have had that privilege, if you will, that they've had that kind of a luxurious good fortune of being in a hit movie that does play well in sequels, and it's always there, and it keeps you before the public eye.
Now, interestingly, back when he was doing Fresh Prince, that's where he met his wife, Jada Pinkett.
Yes.
She tried out for the role of his girlfriend, which Nia Long got.
So, you know, with Jada Pinkett, I actually had an awareness of her from when she was a child. She was an actor at Baltimore Center Stage. I saw her in an August Wilson play when she was a girl. And and I knew of her when she was at the Baltimore School for the Arts. And so I knew about the local connections. The one time I've actually seen her actually was once, and this is quite a few years ago, when she was beginning her screen career. She attended a preview screening at the old Westview Mall Theater there, and she would have been in her teens still at that point. And there was the homecoming aspect that she was a Baltimore girl. She was coming back. And she and Will have actually done a lot in that respect. I mean, they've given money to the Baltimore School for the Arts. They periodically have appeared at fundraising events and this and that. So by way of sentiment, you know, those of us in Baltimore have known her and, you know, really looked on with real fond regards, actually, as to how well they've done. And the fact that, you know, unlike a lot of Hollywood marriages where it's just the celebrity glitz and this and that, it seems like what I call a genuine marriage. I mean, how rare that is in Hollywood, right? Where not just the length of it, speaking of longevity, that they've been married a long time, but you look at the, you look at their kids, you know, Jaden and Willow, and you know, as actors, I mean, the whole family's so darn talented. It's disgusting, right? But there's an essential decency there, right? I mean, I've always liked her, and just having known of her from when she was a kid and watching her get married, and they stayed married, and they had kids themselves. It's almost disgusting how nice it all is, right? And I think really that says a lot to his character, you know. And you know, all joking aside, I mean, there's something there by way of integrity, of decency, that's really seen them through. Because with some of the other folks we've mentioned or could mention, you get these Hollywood marriages that don't last very long for whatever reason, you know, career pressure and image pressure and all that. But this is a case where somehow you have a domestic life that survives all those external temptations and trappings.
Well, it's the second marriage for Will Smith with Jada Pinkett.
It is. But I don't hold that against him.
No, me neither. I wouldn't hold it against
anybody. And actually, Olivia Wilde, for that matter, had a quick early marriage
to an Italian
aristocrat, and that didn't last. You know, but I don't hold that against her. I mean, look, it was probably like a real celebrity-worthy marriage. It probably was a lot of fun going to the casinos and jet-setting and all that, so I won't hold that against her. It was a happy divorce, so far as I can tell.
I saw Will and Jada Smith on I think it was Oprah, it was some talk show, and they asked her, you know, what is it like being married to Will Smith? And she said, you know, this is the man for me, you know. And she mentioned some of his qualities and how much she cared for him. And then she said, if I can't make it work with him, I don't know what I would do. I guess I would just have to give Ellen a call.
Yeah, but a lot of the Hollywood pressure would be there are millions of American women saying, this is the man for me with Will Smith, right? And you just know that, right, when you go out in public.
Yeah, that has to be the hard part. Now, speaking of their kids, he has had his son, Jaden, in a couple of movies that he has done. One was The Pursuit of Happiness, which I think is one of his very best movies.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my favorite movies just in general.
And you know what? I mean, I went in rather dubious, if not cynical, for this reason alone. Simply that you have a Hollywood couple, you have the celebrity marriage, you know, put it in that sort of tabloid way, mm-hmm. right? And they have a kid, and now he's going to be in a movie. And so I sort of went into the theater thinking thoughts along those lines. And then you watch the film itself, Pursuit of Happiness. And it's really tender and it's really sweet. And the dynamic is there, you know, from the adult to the child. And it all works, actually. It's actually, I think, aesthetically one of his best films. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of his talent, his giftedness. And you realize that it's not just simply the indulgence of putting your own progeny in a film. The kid is suitable for the right. So why not, right? I mean, and it's a home movie in a good sense.
Yes. Yeah, very affecting movie, and I think that movie has staying power, and it really gives you a chance to see a serious side of Will Smith for a change. I'd also like to mention Concussion, because that was a movie where, I mean, I knew he was in it, but looking at the character, listening to the character, it really took me a while to see Will Smith in there.
Yeah, and that's actually why when people talk about his career, that film doesn't get mentioned as often as it probably should for that very reason, that it's not on that short list where everyone will think of Men in Black, Bad Boys, or, you know, the other Pursuit of Happiness, other films we're talking about. And then it's just kind of scroll down the filmography. Oh, yeah, he was in that.
Oh, yeah, he was in that.
He was in that, too.
Also, Ali. You know, and I think a lot of people think of that movie. Did you have
Well, you know what? It was not the most likely casting in some ways. I mean, when you think about the physical build and characteristics and so on, you know, he made it work. He's actually very good as Ali. But, like, if you can somehow think back prior to the fact, like if you were casting the film, I don't think he would have been my first choice. And that's just simply based on the physical presence mm-hmm. of who would be good as Ali. He would not have been on my short list. And yet, you know, I'm so glad I was wrong about that, because then I see the film itself. And honestly, not the most persuasive one could imagine, but considering the circumstances, because first of all, you have one of the most magnetic personalities of all time. Who could play that successfully? You know, that's almost an impossible thing. Who could play, you know, Ali? It's like, well, who could do Marlene Dietrich? I mean, you know what I mean? It's just like there's certain characters, certain real life characters who are indelible that way, and you don't want to be the actor stepping into that role, right? There's sort of, and we could talk about Judy Garland even again, but I mean, it's just, you know, there are ways in which it's like almost an impossible task, a thankless one. But, you know, all that into account, he was convincing. He got the Academy Award nomination, you know, and the film has a lot to be said for it in that respect, at least.
They call him Mr. July because most of his movies come out in July.
I thought he was in a calendar or something.
Well, he probably is in somebody's calendar. Now, I did not really like Hancock. That was a movie that I had great hopes for.
Yeah.
For some reason, that movie did not gel for me at all.
No, nor I. I mean, again, I put it on the list of duds he's had, but with a really good act, take the really likable actors, the Tom Hanks, the Jimmy Stewarts, and so on. Look at the full filmography for a Jimmy Stewart type actor or Tom Hanks. They make a lot of movies. Over time, we tend to forget some of the duds, or we just shrug them off as we probably should. But, you know, good actors appear in bad movies. It happens.
Well, he certainly made lots of money, even though the movie wasn't that great, with iRobot. And I think Independence Day made $1,000,000,000.
Do you know, when people tend to forget, when Independence Day came out, it was one of the highest grossing movies of all time. It was such, I mean, I did not like it, to put it mildly, but I sometimes laughed at it and enjoyed it because it had a kind of hokiness to it. It had a kind of shameless quality.
Yes, shameless quality.
Shameless quality that I had to respond to. And one of the things I'll never forget in terms of how we're so easily entertained, a bomb went off, you know, the enemy's coming in, this and that. It's busy, it's active, it's noisy. I get caught up in that too. It's totally hollow, it's stupid, it's silly, it's blah, blah, blah. But moment to moment, there's always something going on, right? And it sort of holds your attention. But the thing I always remember anecdotally was, because it was such a huge box office hit, I always thought, but you know, they're like blowing up the White House and stuff that really I don't want to have happen. You know, it's like really upsetting
this
stuff.
This is entertainment.
But you know who one of the biggest fans of that film was? The elder President Bush. They had a private screening of it at the White, I don't know if it was at the White House, I think it was actually, and he was quoted afterwards as saying how much he enjoyed Independence Day, and I remember thinking, but they blew up your house.
Maybe it was like, you know, that's what I've always wanted to do.
I don't know, I couldn't, I didn't know quite, if somebody blew up my house, I don't think I'd want to boast about that and laugh.
And then you have a sign,
house.
There's a sign there that says, we got the spider afterwards. Right.
But also with someone like Will Smith, because he's so popular, and he really does, like, he's got that box office gold. He couldn't go wrong. Mm-hmm. Film after film, he gets roles like that that really are just honestly kind of like empty films. I mean, they're big box office at the time. They're not particularly well regarded by the critics. They don't always hold up well, even with a larger audience. You look back 10, 20 years, you know, it doesn't always hold up that way. But he gets those roles, and it explains why there's some stuff in his career that really, you know, it's kind of marginal. It's just like, okay, it's a check for this year, like Spies in Disguise, things like that, where you get to the point where they hire you as vocal talent. Those jobs pay really well. And you can have a lot of fun with it, but frankly, it's kind of like, you know, coasting in a way. You know what I mean? And for the audience watching the film, and this is a cynical observation, which I tend to make a lot of, but for a film like that, does it even matter in some ways? Like, it's his voice, but there are any number of other actors who could voice it as well, right?
But you're getting the likability. It's just baked into the pie. Now, speaking of Independence Day, he said he based his character on Harrison Ford and the way he played Han Solo. So if you go back and watch that movie, think about that. Also, here's some things about him that you might not know. He's a chess master, and he's fluent in Spanish, and he can work the Rubik's Cube and do it in 55 seconds.
Those are more reasons to like him.
Well, you know, it shows you like a side you wouldn't guess. And he's put the Rubik's Cube thing in a couple of his movies. It was in, well, he did it on Fresh Prince, but it was in Pursuit of Happiness as well. So,
well, there's definitely an analytical quality. And, you know, sort of like joking aside on this, when you think about his better roles, or even what he's done with inferior material, you can see the wheels turning, and I mean this in a positive way, like as his character would have to think something through. The thought process, actually, he's got a really mobile face. The thought process plays across the face, and you can really sense his character thinking, okay, well, bomb went off over here. We should turn over there. And again, even though it's like sometimes like really silly box office material, there's some smarts in the actor's physical presence, and I mean really in the face. You can really sort of see the thought process, you know what I mean? And that's an analytical quality, which makes it not surprising that with Rubik's Cube, chess, whatever, there's a thinking quality to it and thinking out loud. loud, or not even out loud, thinking physically on the face.
Now, he has said that if he wasn't a musician or an actor, he'd be a computer engineer, that he was always good at math.
That pays well.
And probably would have been the guy who invented the remote control if he'd been around then. When he got out of high school, he had a deal with his dad that his dad would support him for a year while he tried to do his music. But if it didn't work out, he was going to go to college. And he said, I was not going to go to college. So he was just determined to succeed. I want to mention really quickly, one of his best roles, ironically speaking, of being a voice actor, was Aladdin.
Well, let's talk about that, actually, because I didn't like you're talking about the live action remake, which he plays the genie in that.
Yes, absolutely loved him as the genie. And such a hard pair of shoes to fill because of the great Robin Williams.
Yeah, it's true. That's a case where if they offered you the role, you'd have to think hard about
it.
You really would have to, because Robin Williams, how do you top that? I have to say that this is a case where, much as I like Will Smith, there was an overbearing quality which is inherent in the character. He's meant to be always on that way. And a little bit goes a long way. And I had watching this Aladdin, I really got a little bit tired of him after a while. I thought it was him as a live-action cartoon, and I wanted to turn it off. I didn't like the film at all, and I wanted to turn it off in some ways. And that's where I'll sound hypocritical here, but it was very much his persona, but on a kind of overdrive.
Well, they are going to, I'm sorry to tell you, they are going to make an Aladdin, too.
I know. I heard that. I didn't get out of bed that day. I heard that.
There's also going to be, an in-between story where you get all the backstory of the genie and, how he ended up in the bottle and all that stuff. So there's going to be a movie, just about him even before they make Aladdin 2.
We can't blame Will Smith for sequelitis, but it has been a signal attribute of his career. And when you think about it, I've never been a fan of the Bad Boys films particularly, because there's not much going on there. It's all persona driven. It's all the fun of watching them. But for me, it's less fun as you go then sequel to sequel. And Men in Black's had that problem too, actually, that whatever might have worked or been good there or useful is getting kind of stale. And when they try to juice it or pump it up, you can make jokes about being middle-aged, but that only gets you so far, right? But because in the latest Bad Boys, there are some places in it where really nothing much is going on. It's just time for the next explosion, and the guys squeal down the street, and the car turns the corner. I think you're sort of running on empty at a certain point there. And I don't blame Will Smith for this, because those sequels have been so lucrative, and he manages to redeem them to some extent. But when you think about the movies he might have made if he weren't doing these lame sequels...
Well, speaking about movies that he is going to make, coming up, he is going to play Venus and Serena Williams' father in a movie called King Richard. It's supposed to come out November of this year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Do you know, in terms of other casting there, who's going to play?
I did see the names, but they weren't names that I recognized. So I have a feeling that the box office name is going to be Will Smith.
As the father.
As the father.
And certainly early in their careers on the tennis court, you could justify having quite a few scenes, actually, with him, working with the girls as girls, as teenagers and so on. And at the point at which they become more assertive, I guess I feel like I'm writing the script at the moment, but the point at which then the girls, and they certainly have been assertive on the court and off, right? But at what point, and that's potentially quite interesting. What's the relationship like with your father? I don't want to make him seem like a stage father, or you can sort of draw analogies with Tiger Woods in terms of, what's your relationship like with your dad? There's a lot of creatively interesting material there as to what that family dynamic is, and particularly at the point where the girls become superstars, what does that mean for the father? He becomes famous for being the father of the two players. And so I actually would hope they have a lot of time with him, because, the extent to which you accept that and to the extent to which you are potentially jealous of your children.
Right.
But by the same time, you may be jealous of them, but they're the ones putting money in the bank for you. Right?
Well, also you can take the credit for the fact that you have launched these fabulous careers.
But can you still tell them what to do?
I think nothing ever stops them from telling you what to do.
Good point.
Your first coach is always your real coach,
right? Good point.
Now, I don't know how he's going to get his standard, oh, hell no, into a movie where he plays Venus and Serena's dad, because I don't see him saying that. But he manages to get that into almost all of his movies.
Yeah, you get those sort of inside jokes. There's certain taglines or just expressions or attitudes. And he's been good about that, actually, in the sense that when you watch his films, you sort of look forward to that. But it doesn't really spoil the film per se. In other words, you know, the moment comes, whatever, but he doesn't lean on it too hard. That's the point I'm making. It's there. And any good actor like that who's persona-driven, and I mentioned Jimmy Stewart, we talked about Tom Hanks, they're going to have certain character traits or tics, if you will, you expect to see. And it's kind of gratifying, you know, long haul for you as a viewer to get that moment. It's not quite the same as a Hitchcock cameo, but just the moment where the actor doesn't quite tip the hat to the camera eye, but just sort of, you know, just lets you know that this is the integrity that I bring with me to every role. So thank you for coming to see the latest film. You know, there's that quality to it, right? And I'm being facetious, but actually not facetious in the sense that, you know, we are drawn to certain actors. We expect to see them have a certain character trait or set of traits, and even though the roles can be quite diverse. And so that is, even when they play sometimes against type, and even want to play a bad guy, if you will, there will be moments at least, glimmers of where you get a sense. And if the bad guy seems somewhat sympathetic, because it still has traits of the actor we like.
Where do you see, you know, sort of bringing back his career in a curlicue to harken back to his roots? Do you see them ever making like a Fresh Prince movie?
Ooh, that's a good question. Do you think his son would play it?
See, that there's all kinds of possibilities. I think there would be really interesting. I heard an interview with the cast members of the TV show saying, yeah, we're never going to have a reunion on TV. It's not going to happen because they can't afford Will Smith, you know, with TV salary. So forget about it. It's not going to happen. But I thought, well, that doesn't mean you couldn't have a movie. And now that they've done this aging and de-aging thing with Gemini Man, I mean, they've already got some of the stuff in the can.
They could afford it if they had Will Smith as a co-producer.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, he and his wife have been working as producers as well on their own projects and others. So, I mean, I have no idea, frankly, what the status is on that project, if it has viability, but I would think it would have viability because he's not been averse to returning to old roles, right? And why not return to this one? And I would think at that point they'd want to include their own children, whether as actors or in some capacity. So it's an intriguing notion. I haven't really thought about it that much, but as you mentioned it, I think that actually would have a built-in audience. And I would be intrigued to see it. I mean, whether it goes immediately to television or I would think they'd want to do a standalone feature film, wouldn't you?
You could even do like Fresher Princess and make it current day Philadelphia with his daughter Willow.
Yes, I think you should pitch this idea. No, I mean, Willow. And in fact, why did they name her Willow? I never knew that.
I have no idea. Doesn't write. He doesn't call. You know, I haven't been able to ask him these questions.
The reason I mention it is, I mean, celebrities have been known to give their children interesting names. Mm-hmm. Look at the Phoenix family, right?
Yes.
but I've never, no, I mean, Jaden, you know, but, and I'm being a little snarky with this, but I just, you know, like, I've never known if anyone else named that. Well, I guess I have one, like in hippie communes or something, you'd have a name like, my name is Willow.
Willow.
And I'd say, well, hi, my name is Twig. You know, I mean, you would just go back and forth on that. But we're getting silly with this now, but I just, you know, sometimes in Hollywood they have their own naming list, right, as to names they give their children. But that one I never knew. And they actually do enough interviews. You might know this. Have they ever talked about that in terms of their own kids?
Not that I know of. I mean, I know that Jaden was a way of masculinizing Jada's name.
Yeah, that made sense to
that
me.
That makes sense.
Actually, that's a great
maybe
name.
Maybe Willow is for Will. You know, taking his name and turning into something the way they took Jada and turned into
that's
Jada.
True. I'm glad nobody turned my name
I'm making
into
that up on the spot. That's why you did it.
I just might have a hard time in high school, speaking of high school pressure, if I had that as my name.
Yeah, that might be it. That might be it, trying to give them names that were sort of like their parents.
Yeah, I think that probably was it, Jaden for Jada and Willa for Will
for
that
Will.
Way. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I theoretically, as a hypothetical construct, I approve of that. But again, if that were on my birth certificate, I might say, Mom, why'd you do that?
Now, the last Academy Awards did not have a Master of Ceremonies. And, you know, there's always this perennial problem of finding somebody to do it who doesn't, you know, 3 weeks before the event say something outrageous. But why not Will Smith?
You know what? I've thought about that before because thinking about his likability, he would be a host who could be silly and yet also serious. Because some of them tip too far. They're just too silly, you know,
right,
sending it up and this and that. And it bothers me after a while. But he would have the right balance, I would think. So if he has some spare time, that would be a
right.
good role.
Yeah, he should get right on that after that Fresh Prince
reunion.
We are
full of ideas for what he should be doing.
And
how he should name his children. We're not shy about giving recommendations.
Well, that brings us to the end of our analysis of the career of Will Smith. Make sure you check us out for more of our podcasts on dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And we will see you next time at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.